superior to Judaism and Islam, the other theistic religions, I think we can argue that the Christian God's justice, the Christian God's justice, is a greater justice and a greater holiness than Judaism and Islam. Why? Because God is so just, Romans 3, from verses 22 through 31, talk about it, but God is so just that the only way he could allow sinners into heaven was to slaughter his only son in our place. Okay? You don't have that kind of justice. Justice means that the punishment must fit the crime. But sin is a rebellion against the ultimately worthy being, God himself. And in Judaism and Islam, I don't know, what is it? You should obey these commands and devote yourself to me, and I'll just sweep your sins under the rug. That's not as great a justice or a holiness as the holiness and justice of the God of the Bible, who says, I am so just and so holy that if I'm going to allow even one sinner into heaven, I'll have to slaughter my son in their place. So Romans, it's in Romans 3. We're told in Romans 3, and let me see if I get the exact verse. Another word for justice is righteousness. It talks about God, the redemption through Jesus. In Romans 3:26, to demonstrate at the present time His, God's righteousness, that He might be just and the justifier, the one who has faith in Jesus. So, Romans 3:26, God demonstrates His justice by sacrificing His Son, by His Son's death on the cross. Okay? I mean, you don't have any... There's nowhere in the world religions you find any God that is so just that in order to save us, He had to slaughter His Holy Son in our place. Only in Christianity do you have God's justice to that degree. But then God's love and God's grace, in Romans 5, verse 8, it says, but God demonstrates His own love toward us, in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Okay? So, I mean, on the cross, God shows us, on the cross of Jesus, God shows us how much He loves us. I love you so much, I was willing to sacrifice my Son in your place. But He also shows us how just He is. I am so just that to allow Phil Fernandez into heaven, I am so just and I hate sin so much, I had to slaughter my Son. The price had to be paid. God is so just that He must punish sin in full before it could be forgiven. And you don't have it. It's this concept of substitutionary death, substitute sacrifice in Judaism or Islam. And so I think you have a watered-down view of God's justice, holiness, love, and grace. Okay, let me take a break. And let's take a break till 8, and then we'll just go for the last hour there. We need to talk about deism now. And if you go back to your original group of handouts there, where it says the course description and all, and there's a page that says has polytheism at the top, and then has deism down at the bottom. That's what it looks like. Okay. First thing we need to understand about deism. Remember. Sire's looking at it from a historical point. Remember that chart that I drew on the board last week? Where Christian theism dominated Western culture, and it was like, you know, that gave birth to modern science, because all of a sudden, you know, almost every one of the founders of the branches of modern science was a Bible-believing Christian. Men like Galileo, Isaac Newton, Blaise Pascal, Johannes Kepler. And they believed that a rational God created us in His image, so we're rational beings, and He created a universe that makes sense, so that through reason we could really find out about the universe in which we live. Because of this, we had this love fest with reason, to the point where all of a sudden we started using, on the foundation of Christianity, human reason took us where we never went before. I mean, it is not a coincidence that it was within Western culture that the Wright brothers in 1903 put a heavier than air craft in the sky and kept it there for a decent amount of time. And then just 66 years later, it's also not a coincidence that Western culture was able to put a man on the moon. Okay? And so this confidence in human reason was built upon a Christian foundation. But eventually we fell so in love with reason, the gift, that we forgot all about the gift giver, God. And we started to then use our human reason to say, well, you know something? I don't know. Do you really think, can a rational person in the 18th or 19th century really believe that Moses parted the Red Sea, or the virgin birth, or that God became a man? And so we started using our, it wasn't like Thomas Jefferson looked at the historical evidence and said, okay, Jesus is not God and He didn't perform miracles. It wasn't any evidence that he looked at. It was just his reason alone. And it wasn't like his reason was saying, well, this is a contradiction. It was just like saying, no, my reason, you know, it almost got to the point where a man's intuition, almost by gut feelings, you could say what can and cannot happen in the world, because it was just this blown up view of human reason. And so that led the way to deism, where the majority of the thinkers and leaders of Western civilization abandoned the idea of a theistic God and then held to a view where God created the universe, set the laws of nature in motion, and then just left it alone. Okay? So that the closest we could come to God is human reason. And now, we need to differentiate. Frederick Copleston wrote a History of Philosophy, 9, volume 7. We need to differentiate between two different types of deism. Okay? The American deists were what I would call pro-Christian deists. Okay? Copleston talks about this distinction between the American deist of the 18th century and the French deist of the 18th and 19th century. And the American deists were pro-Christian deists, primarily. They didn't believe in miracles, you know, they were deists. So they didn't believe the Bible was God's inspired word, but they did believe that the Bible contained the apex, the highest point of human wisdom or human reason that the Bible was the book to go to if you're going to try to form a government and build a system of moral laws. Okay? And by the way, they believe that the deist, the pro-Christian deist, did believe that God wrote his moral laws on our hearts. So they had no problem with natural revelation, God revealing himself through nature, but they had a big problem with God supernaturally revealing himself. In their way of thinking, it would almost be a blemish on God, a failure on God's part, if God had to interrupt or intervene in human affairs and interrupt the laws of nature. It's like the world is a machine built by God, so it's not broken. So the deist is kind of a denial of man's fall. Okay? And so that just through human reason, somebody mentioned earlier, I think it was you, Sean, that, you know, some people have the idea that if you can just prove something through reason, that something has to be true, then everybody would accept it. Some people have that fallacious view. The deists fall into that category. They believe that just education will solve every problem. Many of our modern thinkers are deists. They profess to be Christians, but they're really deists. And they believe in a personal God, but he really doesn't perform miracles. They don't really believe the Bible. And they look at education as solving all of our problems. Sad thing is that many of our deists in America today are not pro-Christian deists, whereas the American deists of our the founding fathers, they were the founding fathers who were not Bible-believing Christians, like Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin. They did believe that the American deists were pro-Christian deists, so that they agreed, they worked with the Christians among our founding fathers, and both agreed to build the American political system, the American government, on the biblical view of government and the biblical view of morality. Whereas the French deists, okay, were anti-Christian deists. The French deists believed that the Bible and traditional Christianity is harmful. Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin believed that Christianity was one of the healthiest things for society. And if Christianity flourishes in your society, so does your society, your culture as a whole. Now, of course, Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson thought that, of course, were too intellectual for that, but they did believe Christianity was a healthy thing. That's why, you know, the same guys who talk about freedom of religion in the Bill of Rights also said all men are created equal in the Declaration of Independence. Thomas Jefferson penned that, and that we were given certain inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. In other words, God-given rights that man cannot take away, and then God instituted human government to protect those rights. They even talk about the laws of nature and of nature's God. So they're talking about the laws of nature and the laws of God. Blackstone and his commentaries, which predate the Declaration of Independence, but that's where that phrase comes from. Thomas Jefferson took it from there. That was a way of saying the laws of nature, those are God's moral laws written on our heart, and the laws of nature's God, those were God's laws written in the Bible. And the deists didn't believe that they were written there supernaturally, but they did believe that that was the apex of human reason. So basically, the laws of nature that God wrote on our hearts were also recorded even more clearly on the pages of the Bible. with the French deists, it was the exact opposite. They thought traditional religion, especially Christianity, was harmful. And in fact, the French deists were often called atheists, because for all practical purposes, it was as good as rejecting belief in God altogether. So what I'm getting at is, when the atheist of today, secular humanist of today, shows that Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson and many other founding fathers were deists, that doesn't even move even one iota in the direction of where of what this atheist is arguing for. In other words, the founding fathers, though many of the founding fathers were not Christians, they were all for using the Bible, acknowledging the existence of the Creator God, and acknowledging that moral laws come from Him, and that the Bible is the number one source to go to for political and moral ideas. And so the founding fathers saw no problem with it. All by freedom of religion, all they were saying is, you know, Congress, First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And they talk about the freedom of speech, the freedom of the press. Right after penning that, these delegates went back to their states, and out of the 13 colonies, there were 9 state religions. Okay? No contradiction there whatsoever. All the First Amendment says, does the First Amendment say that some little 10-year-old girl can't bring a Bible to school, to a public school? No. First Amendment doesn't say that. Matter of fact, the 10th Amendment says that any powers not directly given to the federal government in this small document, the Constitution, automatically fall back to the states and the people respectively. So the federal government should be kicked out of the public schools, not religion. And it was for the states and the people, the local communities, parents and the teachers to decide whether your school is going to be a Buddhist school or a Christian school or whatever. But basically, only Congress can violate the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion. So, now, the state governments, it was up to them to decide whether they wanted to have a state religion or not. So, basically, the first 10 amendments was just nothing but an attack on the federal government, handcuffing the federal government, limiting the federal government to keep it in its proper place. Now, one state government might have a big state government. Another state government might have a limited state government. As time went on, most of the state governments began to make their state constitutions much like the federal constitution, so that there was more and more say for the people on the local level, so that people could self-govern, can govern ourselves. So keep in mind that the deists, the founding fathers that were deists, were very pro-Christian. And that's why they'd open their sessions in Congress with prayer. And they'd have, you know, a statue of Moses or whatever in court buildings. And they had no problem with that at all. What is going on right now, removing the Ten Commandments from the schools and from public buildings, like constitution, like courthouses, is nothing short of a new revolution. It's an overthrowing of the principles that our founding fathers stood for. Why? Good question. Why do deists pray? The answer: most deists don't. Okay, the founding fathers did pray. At times, Ben Franklin implied that it was just out of respect for the Christians, and sometimes just to make them feel better, and maybe they'll vote the same way we vote on the next bit of legislation that comes our way. But the American deists, being pro-Christian deists, were more likely to pray than like the French deist. French deist, man is the answer. Man is the measure. Man is the solution. Man is savior. With the American deist, there's a humility, and you could pray to God. It's kind of like God is this distant God for both French and American deists, but he's not quite as distant for the American deist. So you can pray to God. God can answer prayers through his providence. In other words, God will not violate or suspend the laws of nature and perform a miracle, but he can use and guide the laws of nature and use natural causes to help America win the Revolutionary War. So,
through the development of it, because he is always going to be the Alpha and the Omega. So through that development in between there,
what it amounts to is that they did believe, many of the American deists believed that prayer was worthwhile because God can help us through natural means win the war. So it's kind of like a God who created the universe, then left it alone. But with the American deist, you could plead with him. He's not going to perform a miracle, but he could work through natural means and help Washington win and the troops to survive at Valley Forge. With the French deist, forget about the God of the Bible. Just throw up a statue of Sophia, the goddess of wisdom, and human reason is God. So in French deism, human reason becomes God, and the God of the Bible gets kicked out. In American deism, the God of the Bible is God, but the Bible isn't really a supernatural book, and God doesn't perform miracles. But he can help us in our time of need. Towards the end of life, it seemed that Thomas Jefferson did... John Adams, through their personal correspondence, did seem to be moving Jefferson more and more towards belief in a future judgment and rewards in the hereafter. Whereas before that, Jefferson just believed that after you die, you cease to exist. Now, keep in mind, though, too, Jefferson and Hamilton pointed this out. Jefferson, as ambassador to France, and on trips to Europe and all, was influenced by the Jacobins, the French deists who were called atheists. And so after penning the Declaration of Independence, he began to move in a direction that even John Adams and Alexander Hamilton were worried about. He did later on, late in life, admit to John Adams that Adams told him Jefferson thought the French Revolution was going to be greater than the American Revolution. Adams warned him, they have too much confidence in human reason, I think it's going to lead to the slaughter of thousands. Jefferson later on, years later, wrote him and said, you were right. You were wrong in only one respect. It led to the slaughter of tens of thousands, not just thousands. So it was interesting, too, because they wrote back and forth. They were enemies at one time, friends at other times. And on the 50th, John Quincy Adams, son of John Adams, was the president on the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, July 4th, 1826. They were both supposed to be guests at the 50-year celebration of our independence, and but John Adams was too sick to go, and then it turned out so was Jefferson, too sick to go, and Jefferson died on that day, the 50-year anniversary, and John Adams, not knowing that Jefferson had already died, his last words were, Thomas Jefferson still lives. He didn't know he had died that day, too. So they both died on the 50-year anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. But what he meant by Thomas Jefferson lives was, I, John Adams, and now dying, but the things that we stood for 50 years ago are still living on. And as a symbol of that, Thomas Jefferson still lives. Well, Thomas Jefferson was dead, but the principles did still live on. But it's interesting that they both died on the 50-year anniversary. And then,
this is just a weird fact. It's actually historically very unlikely that any of them actually signed on July 4th. They didn't even meet that day.
Oh, really? Really?
Some of them on the 3rd and some of them on the 5th. But they take them.
No. That is interesting. Okay, some of the common beliefs of deism. Okay, this is on page 5. I don't know why it even numbered it, but the absentee God. Most of what we're going to say is going to deal. Well, it deals with both types of deists, but it really zeroes in on the French deist. But the absentee God, God who created the universe but then left it alone, he does not intervene. He does not perform miracles, which is point B. No miracles. No exceptions to natural laws.
What do you mean by that?
No exceptions. In other words, natural laws, and here we, you know, there's like the laws of nature. Founding Fathers, what they meant was what Thomas Aquinas meant by natural law, the laws written in our hearts. But now what we're talking about, natural laws, we're talking about like laws of nature, like law of gravity and things like that, scientific laws. And by saying, these guys said, look, the world is a machine created by God, with certain, and it works a certain way, and so they believed that the laws of nature were prescriptive, prescribed the way things had to be, so it was impossible for God to perform miracles. And for God, so no exceptions to natural laws. Human beings, they believed human beings were persons. But still, there's a sense where we're part of the machinery of the universe. I mean, our human bodies are machines, just like the universe is a machine. By the way, I don't think this is as theists began to look at the universe as a machine and man as a machine, and then that eventually led to atheism. Well, if man is a machine, and the universe is a machine, then there's no God. But now we're starting to get some former atheists who are now becoming Christians who are saying that even machines need a machine maker. So what they're saying is the conclusion never really followed. Now, having said that, it's modernism where man and the world are viewed as machines. Postmodernism realizes that it's not really... Things are much more complex than they appear to be. So that, in other words, we can't just rule things out, rule out the supernatural, things of that sort.
Were these atheists, they say that every part of human, would they be
okay. Now, keep in mind, just number one, a deist by definition could not be a Calvinist. Because a Calvinist is what I would call a supernaturalist. A Calvinist believes in miracles. Okay? So right off the bat, they couldn't be. Having said that, some of them did come out of a Calvinist. In fact, many came out of a Calvinistic background, many of the American ones, because Calvinism was so strong. Whereas like a lot of the deists out of France, I believe you'd find them coming more out of Roman Catholicism. But here, our deists, a lot of them did come out of a Calvinist background, because Calvinism was so strong in early America. So it may have played a little bit of a role, but this is a determinism that goes way beyond anything Calvin, Augustine, Edwards, Luther would hold to. This is more of the Gordon Clark hyper-Calvinistic determinism, where it's really weird too, because it's really not even a determinism. I think you have a contradiction. In deism, you have this machine that works perfectly, and we're part of that machine, and God doesn't interfere, yet there's a big emphasis on human freedom and the rights of human beings, and human beings held morally responsible for their actions, at least in American deism. American deism may not have been, it was probably not as consistent as French deism. If you're going to throw God out the window, just throw him out the window completely. And sad thing there is that just leads to the slaughter of the multitudes. So if there's a connection, I would say it would be a non-essential connection. And, the key thing was the deist was rejecting a miracle-working God. No true Calvinist would reject a miracle-working God. So any commonalities would be more coincidental than anything. Unfallen world, they believe that the universe is in a normal, good state. Okay, so the world didn't fall, and it was kind of like, with enough education, we could create the perfect society on Earth. That's the way a lot of deists thought. Now again, American deists denied the fall of mankind, but weren't consistent enough to deny some of the consequences of the fall of mankind. So American deists really believed that man is evil, that there's a cruelty in man that needs to be checked and suppressed by human government, but even government leaders are only human, and since power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely, we need to limit the power of government leaders with a system of checks and balances, separation of powers, three different branches of federal government, separation of powers between local, state, and federal government. So with the Founding Fathers, in other words, the Founding Fathers were, in some areas, some of them were deist in name only. They held to an awful lot of Christian presuppositions. Hence, their view of limited government. Whereas the French atheist, it's kind of like the philosopher kings, the intellectuals, should become dictators because they knew what was best for everybody. And lo and behold, when the intellectuals took control, they started chopping everybody's head off. So, French deists did not even entertain a fall, a sinfulness of mankind, that the American deist still had enough of Christianity in them to see that if there wasn't this problem of evil, we wouldn't even need human government to begin with. That's why most of what we're saying here zeroes in on the French type deist, which are more than any of the likely to be that type of deist today. Ethics is only found through general revelation. In other words, God's laws written on our hearts, our consciences, okay? That's the only place you're really going to find God's moral laws. Now, our Founding Fathers did have a little bit different, a footnote on that, and that is some of the most brilliant ethicists, some of the brilliant, most brilliant moral philosophers in history, wrote their ideas down in the Bible. So the Bible was in fact, if your reasoning processes went a little bit off, the Bible could help steer you back on the right track morally. So again, the Founding Fathers, their deism had a real, real wholesome respect for the Bible. It's kind of like the American deist. Here's a good way to look at the difference between the American deist and the French deist. The American deist gave a thumbs up to the biblical view of morality and the biblical view of government, but a thumbs down to the biblical view of salvation and the biblical view of miracles. Okay? French deists just gave the Bible a thumbs down altogether. And so human reason alone, they deified human reason and made an idol out of human reason.
I mean, you know, but having that, the American deist view, and having thumbs down to salvation, that brings a lot of religions come out of that community.
I think that the deism in America, because the Christianity in America was stronger in the 18th century than it was in Europe, the deism in America was more of a pro-Christian deism rather than an anti-Christian deism like it was in Europe. But Western culture as a whole, a watered-down Christianity became deism. And then it's like, well, what's the difference between an absentee God and no God at all? So that eventually gave way to atheism. And yeah, so it went more secular. I had a sergeant major in the Marine Corps and a CO as well, a commanding officer. My CO put on my, because I had become a Christian, I was taking guys to prayer meetings. I was a good Marine, but he put very religious comments, still manages to do a good job. The sergeant major who was under him always said, you know, Semper Fidelis meant in Latin always faithful, and meant always faithful to God, country, and Corps, Marine Corps. And he said, in that order. He would always say that. But God forbid you went to church and invited other Marines to church, you were on his hit list. So there's an example of more of a deistic type view that, you know, he was just pro-Marine, pro-American, so it's God, country, and Corps. But if you ever lived consistently with that, he would slam you for it. So that's kind of a modern example. But, you know, even our Founding Fathers, that would have been different. If the Sergeant Major was like the Founding Fathers, he would have said, well, it's good that Fernandez is taking some of these other Marines to church with them. Now maybe they won't get drunk and get in an accident and they won't get arrested. Maybe they'll be better Marines. So our Founding Fathers, Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, would never write very religious comma, still managed to do a good job. If anything, they would put very religious comma, or very religious semicolon, therefore he does an excellent job. Okay, so unfallen world, the universe is in its normal good state. Ethics only found through general revelation, you know, written on our hearts. History is linear. It is moving in a direction, you know, there will be an end. But it's predetermined. It's, again, depending on the deist. Because God doesn't perform miracles, deists weren't into going to church. So it's not like deism had one set of beliefs. So, I mean, some deists believed in, yeah, we're going to be judged by our works. It's going to be heaven for those who do good works and hell for those who do evil works, you know. And others, I don't even know if there's life after death. And then other deists, there is no such thing as life after death. And you know, how history spells out, is there going to be a final judgment? It would differ from one deist to another. Okay, refutation of deism. Sire talks about this on pages 49 and 50 of The Universe Next Door. First thing there is that belief, the deist believes in an unfallen world, yet he's interested in ethics. Now, if the world has not fallen, if sin hasn't entered the picture, then wrong hasn't entered into the picture. So why even deal with that? Why emphasize ethics when ethics deals with what is right and what is wrong? Why even debate what is the best form of government? Why even have government? Why debate what is right and what is wrong when there is no such thing as wrong because there's no fault? Another problem was these deists really believed that, like the secular humanists of the 20th century, they really believed that we were going to save this planet. Now again, I'm not so much talking about the American deist as like the French deist, that we were going to bring on this utopian society, and they thought that through induction, basically scientific investigation, arguing from the particulars to the universals, okay? Arguing from particular physical occurrences to a general universal rule, they believed that would lead them to all truth and solve all their problems. Basically, deism was real big with modernism. There's such an overlap, they're almost synonymous at times. But they believe that, you know, we could save this planet and find all truth through reason alone. Okay? Problem there, though, induction, arguing from particulars to universals, failed to lead to certain knowledge of the universals. Okay? Let's say that a guy walked in this room, okay, let's say a pygmy walked in this room, okay, what do they stand, about 3.5 feet tall or whatever, and he looked at us and he said, okay, I'm looking at a room of American, a room with Americans, okay? And he realized that we're all over 5 feet tall. Okay? So he through inductive reasoning, arguing from the particulars to the universal, he might come to the conclusion that all Americans are over 5 feet tall. Okay? Now, his argument could get stronger if he looks at the people, if there's other people on this floor. And he finds that they're all over 5 feet tall as well. So now instead of like maybe 7 people, now maybe it's 15 or 20 people. And then he might go downstairs. There's a big ladies' fellowship, I know, because I took some of the cold water from them. They had some ice water and I got some of that. Hopefully nobody's upset. But he might talk to those ladies and he might, maybe all of them are over 5 feet tall. Now, yeah, maybe not. You never know, but the fact of the matter is there are Americans who are under 5 feet tall. And there's Americans that are shorter than him. So until you looked at every American, measured every American, no inductive argument. Okay? The only way to make an inductive argument, two ways of arguing, induction. And deduction. Induction, you argue from the particulars to the universal. Deduction, you argue from the universal to the particulars. Okay? Now, I'll give you an inductive argument. Socrates and Plato were men. Socrates and Plato were mortal, therefore all men are mortal. Okay? So Socrates and Plato, they died, They were men, therefore all men are mortal. That's a very weak inductive argument. Now let's turn that into a deductive argument. All men are mortal. Socrates and Plato were men, therefore Socrates and Plato were mortal. You see, you're arguing from the universal. Problem is, how many universals do we really know? And do we know them for sure? So, but the only way to rescue induction is if you look at all the particulars in the set. But once you look at all the particulars in the set, then it becomes a deductive argument. So the only way to rescue induction is through deduction. But whatever the case, these guys, through induction, were doing what? They were examining part of the universe. Were they examining a big part of the universe? No, a very small part of the universe. And they were examining it with very limited, I mean, they didn't even, you know, they just barely had microscopes and telescopes. So, you know, that was a real weak inductive argument, and here they were trying...